Today's Bible reading comes from Genesis 4, 3 to 12, Romans 7, 14 to 25, and Mark 7, 14 to 23. Genesis 4, 3 to 12. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. But Abel brought fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering he did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must master it." Now Cain said to his brother Abel, "Let's go out to the field." And while they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Where is your brother Abel?" "I don't know," he replied. "Am I my brother's keeper?" the Lord said. "What have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Now you are under a curse and driven from the ground, which opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it will no longer yield its crops for you. You will be a restless wanderer on the earth." Romans 7:14 to 25. We know that the law is spiritual, but I am unspiritual, sold as a slave to sin. I do not understand what to do, for what I want to do, I do not do, but what I hate, I do. And if I do what I do not want to do, I agree that the law is good. As it is no longer I myself who do it, but it is sin living in me. I know that nothing good lives in me, that is, in my own sinful nature. For I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. For what I do is not the good I want to do. No, the evil I do not want to do, this I keep on doing. Now if I do what I do not want to do, it is no longer I who do it, but it is sin living in me that does it. So I find this law at work. When I want to do good, evil is right there with me. For in my inner being I delight in God's law, but I see another law at work in the members of my body, waging war against the law of my mind and making me a prisoner of the law of sin at work within my members. What a wretched man I am. Who will rescue me from this body of death? Thanks be to God through Jesus Christ our Lord. Say then, I myself in my mind am a slave to God's law, but in the sinful nature a slave to the law of sin. Mark 7:14-23. Again Jesus called the crowd to him and said, "Listen to me, everyone, and understand this. Nothing outside a man can make him unclean by going into him. Rather, it is what comes out of a man that makes him unclean." After he had left the crowd and entered the house, his disciples asked him about this parable. "Are you so dull?" he asked. "Don't you see that nothing that enters a man from the outside can make him unclean? For it doesn't go into his heart, but into his stomach and then out of his body." He went on, "What comes out of a man is what makes him unclean. For from within, out of men's hearts, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, death, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. All of these evils come from inside and make a man unclean." This is the word of the Lord.
When we look around the world, we see so much hurt, so much pain, so much suffering. We only have to look at the war in Ukraine to see the devastation which war causes. But it's always been this way, powerful countries using their might to exert control over less powerful ones. And just this past week, in a press conference of the Chinese ambassador to Australia, the Australian press made him admit that the CCP, or the Chinese Communist Party, believes that the will of the people of mainland China gives them the right to take control over the lives of the 23 million living in Taiwan who want nothing to do with the CCP. And what they plan to do when they retake Taiwan is to re-educate the Taiwanese. And re-education is what the CCP are currently doing to the Uyghur Muslims, which of course means putting them into concentration camps and torturing them to accept communistic political values over their religious beliefs, which has resulted in many of them dying. But if you think we have to look at overseas conflicts to see the harm people cause one another, then of course we need to think again. There are those with undue political influence in the Western world and in Australia who are willing to suppress the rights and wills of others to increase their own wealth and power. We've always known the saying that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And although not a biblical teaching, in a general sense, it is true. Because of the flaws in human nature, we cannot entrust anyone with absolute power. And even the secular world is aware of the corrupting influence on our society by the rich and powerful. Even heavy metal group Motorhead has an anti-corruption song which speaks of injustices perpetrated by the powerful. And that song is called "Just 'Cause You've Got the Power, Don't Mean You've Got the Right." But if you think we have to look at the rich and powerful to see the harm people cause one another, then of course we need to think again. In our own towns, we have people who are addicted to drugs. The use of alcohol is used by people to drown out the pressures and struggles of life. And if you speak to the police, you'll find out that violence, that most violence perpetrated in our community involves alcohol. Speaking of violence, we know that domestic abuse is also very common. People are often hurt by those who are meant to be there to help and protect them. There are bullies in the workplaces and always in our schools. There are those who intimidate others to get what they want and to feel a sense of superiority and of power. There are those who cheat to make more money through dishonest gain than they ought. But if you think we have to look at others in our society to see the harm people cause one another, then of course we need to think again. We all have emotional and psychological scars from the bad things which have happened to us. And these scars negatively affect how we interact with others. We avert our eyes from seeing the needs of others so that we don't feel guilty for not helping out. We are selfish and we want good things for ourselves and to get things our own way. We enjoy excluding people we find it hard to get along with, and we form in-groups of those we like. We think in pride that others are ignorant or stupid for not seeing things the way we do. We say things which are not said in love, which cause harm, and we act in ways which hurt others. And we even fool ourselves into thinking that we are better than others, or better than we really are. Often we are blind to our own faults, and we are prone to lash out at those who point them out, because we feel threatened to have to confront the reality that we are worse people than we are willing to admit. But if you think that we only hurt others by our sinfulness, then of course we need to think again. For we can cause much of the trouble we find ourselves in. Our addictions hurt us. Our inability to be caring and generous hurt us. But so too does being naive and trusting too much and too easily. Our poor choices hurt us, as does our procrastination. But so too does working too hard and too much. The words of harm we speak to others return to us as they build up resentment against us. The lies we tell form neurological pathways, and each time we lie, these get stronger and we find it harder and harder to tell the truth. Every time we mistreat someone, our conscience is injured and we suffer. There is no deceitful thing we do, no intentional act of harm we cause, which does not cause us psychological trauma. We can even lie so much that we become no longer conscious that we are lying, fooling ourselves into believing the lies we tell. Today, we're starting a new series looking at God's heart in the prophets. When many people read the Old Testament, they see God as being far angrier and more vengeful than who we see Jesus in the New Testament. And we find it hard to see how they reveal the same God. In this series, we will look at how God's heart is indeed shown in the Old Testament, and how the loving God we meet in Jesus is the same loving God we meet in the Old Testament. And so to start this series, we begin with confronting the truth about human sinfulness. Human sinfulness is undeniably at work in the world, and it is an inescapable part of our humanity. It is seen at all levels. It is seen in how nations treat each other, how individuals in society treat each other, how families, friends, and neighbors treat each other, and how we treat others, and also in the troubles we cause ourselves. The problem with the world we live in is that people hurt one another and themselves. There is evil in our hearts. There is evil in your heart, and there is evil in my heart. When Jesus was teaching about the true origins of uncleanness, he said that our spiritual uncleanness comes from within. Mark 7, verses 20 to 23, out of human heart comes evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. All these evils come from inside and make a person unclean. Notice the quality about each of these things which Jesus identifies as the things which make us unclean. They all have to do with us causing harm to either others and or ourselves. Evil thoughts are the desires to satisfy our dark desires. Sexual immorality hurts what are to be our most intimate relationships. Theft takes from others. Murder takes the life of others. Adultery is the intentional destruction of the husband and wife bond. Greed takes from others. Malice enjoys hurting others. Deceit intentionally tricks others. Lewdness brings intimate things into public. Envy wants what others have. Slander destroys reputations. Arrogance puffs us up. And folly causes us to act unwisely. God doesn't call these things sin because he just has a personal list of pet hates. God calls things sin those things which cause unnecessary harm and stop people and the world from enjoying the full goodness God wants to bring about. And that's the problem with sin. Sin brings into existence pain and suffering which otherwise would not exist. And Jesus points this out. And Jesus points out that this bringing into existence of harm is at the core of our being. It is an inescapable part of who we are. In Genesis 4, we have the first murder between the very first brothers. This is the outcome of the sin which Adam and Eve brought into the world and the pattern for the harm sin brings into the world. Why is Cain angry with Abel? Abel hasn't even done anything to hurt Cain for him to be rightfully angry about. All that Abel has done is present an offering to God which pleases God. All that he has done was do the right thing, to have the right attitude in making a sacrifice to God. Cain was at fault for not bringing a sacrifice which pleased God. And Cain was angry because of his own failure to bring a sacrifice in the right way. He failed to do what was right. Cain becomes a malicious person. He is going to cause someone else harm because of his own failings. And so God comes and counsels Cain, saying, "Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must master it." God is saying to Cain, the way you fix the problem of your sacrifice being accepted is just by doing what is right. Like Abel, follow his example. But instead, anger and jealousy is filling Cain's heart, and he's allowing those thoughts and emotions to fester and to gain control over him. And he's going to give in to the evil in his heart. Notice the way God frames this. If Cain does not do what is right, then the outcome will be causing unnecessary harm. Doing what is right because it will bring blessings and good into the world. Whereas doing what is wrong because it results in harm and suffering, and in this case, murder. And if we do not set our wills to do what is right, then sin will control us and we will do evil. And we see in the story of Cain and Abel, God is deeply upset with Abel's murder and says to Cain, "What have you done? What have you done? Abel's blood cries out to me." And so here we see that when the lifeblood of a person is shed, it cries out to God. It cries out to God of the hatred and the senseless violence which has caused that life to be ended. God feels the emotional pain of every person who suffers. And he hates that harm as much as the one who suffers from it. Causing unnecessary suffering and harm is offensive to God. And so when God says, "This is my will for you, and this isn't my will for you, this is all said in love and in concern for the welfare of all people. God knows how he has made us and what is good for us and what causes us harm. So God instructs us to do the good which builds up people and instructs us not to do the evil which will tear people down. He instructs us to do what is wise for living the best life we can and instructs us not to do what will end up in causing a mess of our lives. God is like a loving parent who wants the best for his children. A loving parent calling us to the good and away from the bad. A loving parent doesn't place restrictions on their children to stop them enjoying life, but to prevent them from hurting themselves. When a parent wants their children to be home at night rather than walking around the streets with their friends, this is because they love them. And a loving parent will discipline their children if they catch them smoking because of the harm which that smoking will cause them. the restrictions and the discipline and the rules which God gives are for the same purpose. And we see this in Israel. And when God gives rules to live by for his people, Israel, he gives them rules for things which they actually don't really understand the reason for. When God gives Israel a list of animals they could and couldn't eat, even though they had no idea that this was based on the fact that there are parasites which live in animals and certain animals are more and less likely to have them. And God commanded the people to wash their hands before eating, when they had no idea that germs can cause sickness. And the Ten Commandments are the most basic requirements for a healthy community. We must understand how everything God calls sin brings about unnecessary harm, and how they prevent us from experiencing the best life possible. Even if we don't understand how and why, like the Israelites would not have understood how and why, it does. But of course, the problem for us is that sin, or bringing harm into existence, is deeply rooted in us. Even if we set our minds to doing what is right, we still end up doing what is wrong. And that's one of the things Paul's getting at in Romans 7, 14 to 25. The only reason why we can be fully cognizant of what is sin is because God has revealed what sin is and what righteousness is. But even when we do accept this, we are still completely incapable of living righteous lives. We are all slaves to sin. We cannot do the good we want to do, and we continue to do the evil we don't want to do. We might be able to reduce the amount of evil we do and increase the good we do, but we will always find ourselves doing things which we know are wrong and not able to do the things we know are good. So this is the situation we find ourselves in as a human race. Human beings are hopelessly enslaved by sin, unable to be free from its grasp. We can't help but increase the misery and suffering in the world, no matter how hard we try not to. God hates it when people cause unnecessary harm and suffering. It saddens him greatly when we get ourselves into all sorts of a mess and when we hurt others. So what is God to do? That's what we're going to be exploring over the coming weeks as we explore God's heart in the prophets. Amen.